You're listening to Strictly Business Podcast with Lindsay Williams.
2024, to me anyway, is being dominated by politics and polls and the price of money. I mean, just this week, or just in the last few days rather, we've had Jerome Powell, the chair of the US Federal Reserve, testifying to Congress and saying all sorts of things that we could have predicted anyway. We've had Britain's budget, and we've had the State of the Union address last night in the United States of America. And also, let's not forget, European Central Bank decision on monetary policy with Christine Lagarde. So much going on and so much more to go on, because I think there's something like 55 elections worldwide going on in 2024. It's actually rather intriguing. With me is Russell Silverstone, investment strategist at 91 in London. Russell, it's not even the end of the first quarter and we're already being bombarded with stuff that we might not usually look at.
No, absolutely. I mean, it's a big year. Politics is coming to the fore. And yet, actually, you know, when you look at markets, volatility is low. Everybody's happy about markets and suggests to me that there could be some upsets along the way.
Oh, that's what I was going to ask you. Does it make you suspicious, the fact that everyone's so sanguine, or rather market participants are sanguine and pushing, for example, the S&P to new highs? Does that make you slightly edgy?
I think, well, as a sort of a bond guy that sort of thrives on uncertainty and bad economic data, absolutely gives me a bit of a headache. But look, it sort of makes sense in the economies look okay. We're recovering from COVID. The interest rate cycle is turning. The inflation's coming down. Obviously, there's a lot of excitement about AI in the world. So you can sort of see, you know, you can see this sort of narrative. But yeah, I think the lesson of past crises is, you know, look for the imbalances. And, you know, you can see a few things like sort of commercial real estate and so on. But actually, you know, the banking sector's well capitalized. So, you know, there's a lot of good news out there. And I think that's really what's propelling markets at the moment.
Does it matter that, for example, Joe Biden acquitted himself admirably or relatively admirably at the recent State of the Union address? I mean, do markets sit down and say to themselves in their morning meeting, well, look, this could mean that there's a very close race between himself and Trump? Does it matter that the UK budget was fairly anemic? And does it matter that the ECB left rates unchanged? What do you think as a strategist?
Yeah, I mean, I think politics absolutely does matter, but I think it matters more in the long term than it does in the short term. I think markets are absolutely keeping the weather eye on what's going on in the US, but what they, rather than sort of thinking one candidate good, one candidate bad, I mean, typically what we would do, in fact, we've done this already, is we would look at the sort of policies that we know would be on the agenda if either Trump or Biden got in. And so, you know, if it's President Trump again, it's widespread protectionism. And then you know, you have to think through, okay, what are the implications of that? If it's President Biden again, then continuation of this sort of Inflation Reduction Act and so on. So we absolutely think about it. I don't think it makes any difference to monetary policy, to be honest. They would all say that they are apolitical and just adjust policy appropriately. And yes, as someone that looks at central banks pretty closely, I think it is important because those central banks control the price of money. And that's, as we know, what makes the world go around. And therefore, it is important. The budget in the UK, you know, in my experience, I would say it's 90% political and 10% economic. You know, markets didn't move at all, in fact. Mm-hmm. And so I think that's just a sort of a political showpiece. But yeah, absolutely. I think it all matters.
And we've recently had the Chinese annual policy-making meeting, if I can call it that. And for the first time, there wasn't a post-meeting press conference, and people were saying, well, that's because President Xi doesn't want to be usurped by the Prime Minister. And I don't know, are China and India, with the Indian election coming up, are they as important as, for example, the election in the United States of America?
Oh, gosh, yeah, I mean, absolutely. I mean, China, if you looked at the size of the economy, I mean, everyone's looking at it closely, and the sort of ramifications of the slowdown we've seen in China can be felt, you know, less so in the US, but certainly right across Europe. I mean, look at Germany. Germany's really, really suffering, and that's because it's an export machine. And so, we have to keep an eye on China. And they've had the mother of all property busts, no doubt about it. And they're just introducing lots and lots of sort of piecemeal adjustments, making sort of, you know, buying restrictions lifting, keeping the price of money very cheap, bond yields at all-time lows. You know, they're trying to reflate that economy. But yeah, given the size of the economy, it's incredibly important to you know, the global level, no doubt whatsoever. You know, I think to be honest, the US election will grab all the headlines this year, as it always does, and that's largely to do with the, you know, it's a rerun of what we saw, you know, quite recently, about, you know, 4 years ago. No one really wants that. But again, you know, just come back to this, I will separate sort of politics and economics and policy. And you know, do you feel the effects of the political decisions in the medium term? Not immediately, unless it is Trump again and he just suddenly slaps on, you know, across the board tariffs of 10% on European imports or something. And you will feel that immediately. But generally speaking, I think these things play out over time. And that's, you know, what we were trying to do is determine the effects of that.
Before we get to the price of money, i.e. interest rates, you haven't mentioned India. India is the world's most populous nation. It's taken over from China, so obviously incredibly important. You've got companies like Disney going to India and saying, right, I want to be with one of your largest companies. And they've done that so they can stream their products to potentially 750 million people. So is India important as well?
Of course, absolutely. You know, no doubt whatsoever. It's incredibly important. And I know, again, this absolutely isn't my area, but the markets have been doing incredibly well. And there's an awful lot of interest. But, you know, again, I think there usually is, if, you know, it's a, sort of in a largely capitalist world, not solely capitalist world, obviously. But, you know, with a dynamic young sort of workforce, there's an awful lot of excitement around India at the moment. And, you know, it's inevitable that people are focused on it. So, yeah, absolutely. I wouldn't sort of, you know, dismiss it. I find the contrast with China very interesting. Another huge population, but one's really struggling and the other's booming. So it's a very interesting contrast.
Okay, who's going to break first? The ECB, the US Federal Reserve, who's going to cut rates first? Because it's neck and neck at the moment.
Oh, it really is. I reckon they're going to go within about a week of one another. I reckon the Fed go and the ECB go, they both go in June. And there is actually one central bank that's, you know, I would argue probably even more interesting, which is Japan. And I know we've touched on this, you know, a few times in the past, but there's a strong chance that actually the Japanese hike rates, you know, how many of us have actually ever seen a Japanese rate hike? they hike rates this month. So that's coming. And that is connected with the Fed and the ECB because, you know, the US is obviously doing really well. Europe's stagnating, but inflation is too high. The sort of word that I think that sort of binds all three together is confidence. And, you know, the Fed have got to be confident enough that inflation really is coming back to target. It looks like it is, but obviously last month's inflation data gave them the scare. We get the labour market data today. Last month's was absolutely stellar. ECB, similarly, they're very worried about service price inflation in the Eurozone, and they want to be confident enough that is coming back down and is consistent with target. And the Japanese want to be confident enough that the US isn't going to tip into recession and they raise rates just as the US turns over. So, you know, it's all interconnected. And, you know, say the word that unifies all of them is confidence. And I think, again, that's totally understandable when you think about where we've come from. We've had the biggest inflationary shock for 50 years. And policymakers will be sort of super cautious to ensure they don't sort of cut rates too soon and trigger off another round of inflation.
You've got so many inputs coming into your inbox every single day, Russell. And as a strategist at 91 in London, you're going to sit down, for example, at the end of the quarter with your team and say, OK, this is what we've got. And there's a huge flow chart in front of everybody. And you've got to make sense of it. I mean, are you changing your strategy at all or waiting for event-driven decisions?
I would say that any, you know, any asset manager you speak to has an investment process. And the key things are it's sort of systematic and repeatable. So actually, we have a monthly sort of cycle of meetings. And we just typically update them as new data comes in. But we use sort of scenario analysis. So we don't just say, this is what's going to happen. What we will say is, this is the most likely scenario. And then we have risks around those. And all we do is sounds straightforward, but it's obviously there's, you know, a lot going on underneath the surface, is that we say, right, here's the central scenario, and this is the scenario we think is the most likely, and here are the risk cases. This is the, you know, the stronger case, and this is the weaker case. And that's all we do. It's very easy to get bogged down in the noise. So we do sit down on a monthly basis. We sit down, what's the macro situation, and what does that mean for assets? And that's basically what we do. And out of that comes the decisions. And the reality is, I don't think views change that much. Actually, I would say they evolve over time.
Mm. A lot of evolving to be done in 2024. Russell, thanks so much for your insight. Russell Silverston is a strategist at 91 in London. The views and opinions expressed in these podcasts are those of Lindsay Williams and various contributors and do not reflect the policy, position or opinion of any other agency, organisation, employer or company associated with strictlybusinesspodcast.com. Assumptions made on the analyses are not reflective of the position of any other entity other than the speaker or the author. And since we are critically thinking human beings, these views are always subject to change, revision and rethinking at any time. Please do not hold us to them in perpetuity.